for the summer department. I'm really nervous. Hi, my name is Blair, I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is April 27th of 2025. And just really briefly, you know, going into this, I had been in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous since 2012. And, you know, it just, you know, I just kept falling short there and going back out. And, you know, it was the night before my sobriety date that I was trying to taper myself off of something, and that really doesn't work well for me. And I had determined that my sobriety date was going to be May 1st, and that was going to be it. And, you know, God had different plans. And I went to Saturday Night Fever, and there was a gentleman who spoke, and he said, I don't remember the amount, but it was an extensive amount of years sober that he had. He talked about an extensive amount of years that he spent in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's all I heard. And it was enough to just give me a little bit of hope to think that, you know, hey, maybe I can get this one last go. You know, it was kind of just the same as it always was, same defeat, same breakdown, out of ideas. The only difference really this time was like an honest desire to have a relationship with God, and like the realization that like I don't have to understand God, and that like God can love me without physically touching me or being in front of me. And that was really hard for me to kind of like believe in leading up to this. You know, I got right into the steps by week three. We had done my fifth step, and I was making amends in Chicago. And, you know, from there, the only things that I can really say is, like, you know, every time that I think that I know what's going to happen, or I think I know something, you know, God comes and shows up, and very quickly I'm taught that I don't know, and that He has a plan that's bigger and better for me, one that I could have never dreamed of. And sometimes what that looks like is that, you know, I have to go through a harder period of life before that comes. And, you know, Rachel always say to me, trust the process. And I'm on the other end screaming and kicking and crying sometimes with resistance. But, like, thank God that the grace period there is, like, so large, because there are times that I've fallen so short. But ultimately, like, as long as I desire this relationship and I keep in constant contact, like, and I started helping others, like, really early. I think it was, like, by month three I was sponsoring. That, you know, I was able to continue walking this path instead of getting loaded. Really quickly, so Rachel is going to be speaking for me tonight. She's my sponsor. The first time we met, you know, our conversation looked like, I know the sponsorship line you came from. I don't know if I'm going to be enough for you. My mentality is live and let live. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so screwed. And I was, because I had no idea what grace was. I had absolutely no idea. And when I tell you that Rachel is like a shining, I describe her as a pretty blonde who is a shining angelic light of grace, dignity, and respect. Like, that is literally, like, emulates it 100%. And like, she was able to show me grace. This poor woman, I swear, like, in those early weeks especially, like, I would go on, like, a 30, 40-minute rampage, and she would just sit up on the other end and just listen. And, like, not critique, and, like, not judge, and not grade me, and just listen. And I would get off the phone, and I'd feel better. And then, like, as time went on, like, I just, like, things have happened in my life that I just can't even believe, and learning, you know, how forgiving God is, and how forgiving others is, and how God works in her life, and, you know, the way that she gives me enough space for God to enter instead of just constantly telling me what to do has been, like, a different experience that I can't even explain. And that, you know, I think that that's it. So I'd like to welcome her. Good evening, my name is Rachel, I'm an alcoholic. Dignity and grace. I heard people laughing, by the way. Don't think I didn't clock that one. Because they've known me for a very long time. My sobriety date is 8/28 of 2003. I have a sponsor. She has a sponsor. She knows she's my sponsor. I stay current with her. Man, this is such an honor to be asked to do anything like this in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's such an honor to get to stand beside women like Blair. You know, she is resilient, and she shows, she's just like another example that Alcoholics Anonymous works. You know, she submitted to the process. It wasn't her first time. She'd worked the steps before. She had a way better sponsor than me before. You know, women that have like their girls and they do their stuff and like their families. And, you know, I can't really provide an experience like that. So I was really scared it wasn't going to be enough. But like, God shows up and He shows out. And that's so true in my life over and over again. So I come from a long line of alcoholism and mental illness, I'll just say that. And recovery is kind of my whole entire life. I have this sweating disorder, it's called hyperhidrosis. It's like a real thing, it's so bad when I'm speaking. Really no other time is it so terrible, but you know, when I was a little kid, it was very bad, and my mom decided to make me play piano, which was great with this, with these soaking wet hands all the time. I remember my very first resentment, it was against this woman, Mrs. Gelfand, my second grade teacher. She would take my papers that were soaked, and she would pin them up at the front with these clothespins. I have a medical condition. What a sick woman, you know? And I just wanted to tell her so bad how I felt and what I thought, and I could not, you know? And just to mention, growing up, like, I was one of those kids that felt like I didn't get the memo on the playground. Like, all these kids were just interacting and talking with their hands, and it seemed like happy and normal and well-adjusted, and I just felt like I didn't know how to relate. And that doesn't make me alcoholic. If you didn't feel that way as a child, that doesn't mean you're not alcoholic. You know, I am alcoholic because I have an abnormal reaction when I put alcohol into my body. You know, I have this phenomenon of craving that goes off, and I cannot determine when I'm going to stop once I start. And, you know, I needed that drink pretty bad. You know, I had begged my parents to go to this church by my house. My parents were like self-proclaimed agnostic atheists, you know, and I begged to go to this church, and I started to get sexually molested by this 18-year-old guy who was one of the first men to really ever pay attention to me. And I was 11 years old, and I knew if my peers knew the things that I had done, that they would know what I was, you know, and that was shameful, that was disgusting. And I share that also because that doesn't make me alcoholic. You don't have to have some kind of sexual trauma to be an alcoholic, female or male. But I share it because that was one of the secrets I brought in here with me. That is one of the things that I thought made me so disgusting and unlovable, those things that I did as a juvenile. And I can share them now, and I didn't feel that degree of shame. Like, it doesn't eat my lunch. It's actually one of my greatest assets for like helping others, and that's how God transforms us here. And it's very painstaking and slow. Especially in my case, because I have 22 years and my life does not look how I thought it would look at all. You know, sometimes, like, if you would have told me I'd be living in an apartment and, like, my external circumstances would look the way that they look when I had 22 years sober, I'd tell you, like, I'd probably punch you in the face when I had 5 years, because I was really going to be something, I thought. You know, and God has definitely kept me right-sized, and I just have to like trust his plan. So I like I said, I really needed that drink. It was MP 2020, the orange. I've been thinking about that in particular for a while because I'd seen this guy on the busway, it hanging out of his pocket, and it looked really cool. And so I asked this guy named Wolfman to buy me some from the quick stop by my house, you know. And it was right before my 12th birthday. I was with this girl, Stephanie Ernst. I thought she was so pretty and so cool. And I had been like a very overweight kid, and braces, glasses, horrible sweating disorder, like nerd alert, like math superstars, that whole thing. And so when she asked me to come and drink, I was like, totally, you know, like I do that all the time. And so I picked that drink because I'd seen this guy with it. And I turned that orange Jubilee Mad Dog like back, and I just intuitively knew you were supposed to chug it. And I did, you know, and I got inebriated. And that's pretty much like, I blacked out the very first time I ever drank. That was an augury of what was to come for me. I'm not a good drunk. You know, I'm like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Like, I look like a sweet, like, well-mannered young woman sometimes. You know, like, maybe right now I'm trying. I'm really trying. And, but when I get drunk, like, I have this, like, change, right? And, I say really mean things, and I will do whatever it takes to get that next drink, and I will step on whoever is in my way, you know, and who really bore the brunt of that was my family, you know. And I started going in and out of institutions really young, you know. I went to my first outpatient when I was 13 years old. I presented to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 13 years old. And they would tell me things like, there's principles inside these rooms and outside of these rooms. They would tell me, like, you know, you have the brain of an alcoholic. The way you're saying that you drink is that of an alcoholic. And if you're lucky enough to be alive when you're 18, you're going to be in jail or in an inpatient treatment center. And, you know, both of those things came to pass for me. If I'm going to get drunk, I might as well just go, like, give myself to the cops, because I was arrested 4 times as a juvenile and 3 at 18, and I'm just a belligerent, bad drunk, you know. And it took me a long time just to clean up those arrests at 18 years old. I can't imagine what it would be like to have been arrested after that, because it was hard enough to get the license that I have now. My drinking career is kind of characterized by like treatment centers and being arrested and thinking that was really, really cool. You know, like way too cool to be here and to do this rah-rah stuff that you guys are doing, because I know what you're talking about. You're secretly talking about Jesus, and I want no part in that cult BS, okay? And thank God that I had sponsors that were just kind to me and told me to keep coming back, because I was able to pick a God of my own understanding, which for a while was just the group. Newsflash, that's not enough for a girl like me. That's weak. You know, I needed more than just a group of drunks. I needed to find a power greater than myself, but I had so many old ideas about what I thought God was, and I just was not going to be a part of that organized religion stuff, and I'm so grateful. So I got in a lot of trouble. I went to several treatment centers. I came in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous from 13 until 19. Right before my 20th birthday, I did end up getting sober. The end of my drinking looked like this. I was living with a 55-year-old man who was living like a sugar daddy to me.
and my boyfriend, because hello, like, he needs a place to stay too. And we were one dysfunctional family. That gentleman's name was Larry. He committed suicide in the apartment. He shot himself in the head, and I found him. And I knew about you guys because I had been to two treatment centers as an adult, and I knew some people that were sober through Alcoholics Anonymous. I was in Mississippi at this time. I had gotten court ordered by Florida, the state of Florida, into treatment for 1 year, which was a really good deal for me. And I just, you know, I left AMA with a male counterpart from that treatment center, you know, and set off to prove that I could drink like a normal person. And I, it was really, really dark because my parents stopped sending me money and started going to this thing called Al-Anon and started saying things to me, their own, you know, their oldest daughter, that they were detaching from me with love, whatever that means. And thank God they did, you know, because I didn't have power. I was lucky that I lived in an apartment that paid for water. But I didn't know, you know, I didn't have cable or anything like that. Like, I just lived like an absolute animal. And I had gotten into school because I had a decent SAT score, but I also was in Mississippi and they don't really care about grades and things like that. I got into this college and I had told the boyfriend that it was really important for me to get to school. So I got there 3 days late, but I got there right on time, you know, because my God, he is always right on time. And we were in an American government class, and some girl raised her hand and she said, "Dr. Grum, what's your favorite kind of wine?" And he said, "I don't drink, I'm allergic to alcohol." And I went up to him after that class and I asked him, "How allergic to alcohol are you?" You know, because I knew what that meant. I'd heard people say that before. And I just proceeded to verbally vomit all over him that I was going to need extra help and I hadn't been in school for a while and I cheated my way through everything I'd ever done. And he asked me if I wanted to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and he didn't ask me for any sexual favors, which was really nice of him. You know, I got sober in the early 2000s. It was a different time, y'all. There was not the Me Too movement, you know what I mean? Like, it was a different time. And I went to that meeting, and I had picked up White Chips there before. It was the Way Out group in Ridgeland, Mississippi. And that desperation just meant opportunity for a second, you know, and I did the first different thing I had ever done. I got a bunch of girls' numbers after that meeting and I used them. You know, I talked to them after the meeting. And I reached out the day after, maybe even that night, you know, and I just grabbed on to this thing. And like I said, I thought I'd kind of neatly evaded the whole God thing with the group of drunks, but, you know, when I tried to take my own life when I had 6 years and was going through a breakup and had absolutely no God and no coping skills, I got this new sponsor, Jerry, who told me for a girl like me, a power greater than myself was a non-negotiable. And I started to pray on my knees to a God I did not believe in whatsoever, at all. And I asked that God to bring my will into alignment to what and who he would have me be. And I started getting these messages that I was supposed to help others and that I was supposed to be of service. And I was supposed to do this career that was of service. And I was like, I'm so stupid, like, I already have this other degree, like, I'm not doing that, you know? And, I also, you know, met a really kind and nice man who showed me, like, demonstrated on a daily basis prayer and meditation, and, he taught me how to believe in God and like how to call God by name and like have this relationship that I had just never had in my life, you know? And it was like the most loving and stable relationship that I've ever had. And, you know, I ended that relationship. We got married. We had the big AA wedding, you know? And I had to go through like a very public divorce over the last 2 years. But you know, that man, like we keep our son at the forefront of everything that we do. And like he prayed with me on my way here tonight, you know? And I just hope that our relationship can always be like this, where we both are loving and supportive towards each other. With our recovery and like both show up at the same place, same time for our son because we want him to have a two parent experience, even though we don't live together. But such great events come to pass for people here. I have seen Blair be a mother to two beautiful children, a sober mother. I'm realizing the value of being, you know, I was sober I was sober 18 years when I had my son. I had no idea what a gift I'm giving to that boy to be a sober mom. And I could have missed it all, you guys. That's all I got. Thanks.